congratulations to Senegal, champions of Africa. World-class tournament by all standard, according to Kachi. Not so much according to Olawale. We start the show. My name is Adeboale. Adeboale. It's still the best sporting show in the whole of the universe. It's still news instant sports. Yeah, you know, band radio scoop, and of course on all the Apple Podcasts and Spotify, as you want to like it. I have the gang with me today. I have Olawale with me, fresh out of the defeat against Boro. I have Kachi basking in the Italian derby, winning against Inter Milan, and of course, Eddie Valdarsar suffering a loss as well against Boro. Guys, you want to say hi to the guests?
Hello, everyone, listening to us wherever you are all over the world. Welcome to the show. In as much as we might have a lot of reservations about the African Nations Cup, something actually stands out in the Nations Cup between 2012 and 2022. We've had seven Nations Cup and we've had seven different winners.
Oh, marvelous. Good. Okay, Kachi.
Sports fans, the Super Bowl is set. It will be the Los Angeles Rams playing against the Cincinnati Bengals. We'll have the two youngest coaches in the history of the Super Bowl facing each other. One is 36, one is 38. I'm also excited about the halftime show for a hip hop head such as myself. Looking out for Dr. Dre and Kendrick Lamar and Eminem would be a big thing. Milan won the Derby
Nice.
de la Madonna, even though some people, aka Debo, wished evil on AC Milan, but God passed Debo. Stay tuned for a cracking show.
Right, perfect. She.
Yeah, hello everyone. Welcome to the show. And congratulations to Senegal. I think that's definitely the worthy winners for this year's AFCON. And I think highlight for me for this particular competition is the emergence of two debutants into the dropout stages, talking about Comoros and Gambia reaching the quarterfinals of the AFCON. Welcome
Nice.
to the show, everyone.
All right, perfect. Like we always do, we jump off from the best of the rest. And where do we start from? We start from the city that has successfully hosted the Summer Olympics and for the first time hosting the Winter Olympics as well. This is the first time it's happened in the history of Olympics. Olympics, I believe, it has been around for so many years. And the city is the city of Beijing in China, where we have two participants from Nigeria participating in this Winter Olympics. Of course, they are not full Nigerians, they are half Nigerian, but hey, they are flying the flag of Nigeria. So it's a good one for us. And right now we have Norway standing on the front foot of the table with three medals, closely followed by Sweden with two medals and the Republic of China with five bronze medals as well. Nothing so much to talk about there, but then I go into the basketball world where we have James Harden out for the Brooklyn Nets. It has been confirmed about 2 hours ago that he's out now, so he's not going to be playing. It definitely on Sunday he's not going to be playing their game and could be rested potentially for over the week as well. And the Nets right now, six losses after seven. Kyrie Irving is playing it down. Olali, I'll start with you. KD, not fit. Kyrie cannot travel, cannot play within the state of New York. And of course, Aiden being down with injury right now. Is he good? How worse could he potentially get for the Nets right now?
Yeah, it can't probably get worse than more than this. In the earlier in the season, we tried to downplay all this drama going on with the Knicks, thinking that they probably still have enough talent to still probably put a very good challenge for the title. But it just seemed like I said some couple of weeks ago, it just seems like the god of basketball doesn't just want these big three to play together from one drama to the other. The Brooklyn Nets actually mortgage all their, what do you call it, the
Assets.
quality, they are all their assets to get James Harden in. Last year, if not for the big shoe Kevin Durant was wearing. They could have probably won last year, but it didn't happen. We thought it was going to happen this year. First of all, due to the COVID-19 restriction in New York, Kyrie couldn't play. He couldn't be part of the team. And as of today, if you are going to get my opinion, nothing as it stands now will make Kyrie to take that vaccine. I don't, for him, I don't think the NBA title is bigger than whatever he's fighting for. I think the Brooklyn Nets does have to accept that. So, and looking at the roster, it looks like outside the those big three, in as much as they have some very, you can't call LaMarcus Aldridge a bad player. He might probably have passed his peak. They have some couple of good players, but it just seems like outside those big three, there is nothing.
There's nothing.
And the concern from me is, I think coaching, it seems Steve Nash has been exposed a bit about his coaching. It seems the team lack a bit of coaching. And there are rumors that the trade deadline is going to be Thursday. There are already rumors surfacing that the Brooklyn Nets might likely be listening to offer from the Philadelphia 76ers for Ben Simmons. If they actually do that, two things for me. Number one is that probably they've probably gotten an inside, what do you call it? From James Harden, they've probably gotten a bit of information from
inside information.
Mm-hmm. Inside information that he might not renew, it might not sign with them in the offseason when he becomes a free agent. So instead of them losing him for nothing, probably they are looking at cashing out on him. And number two is, whichever way, they are probably looking at the future and they will just accept whatever happened this season. Because I don't see the Brooklyn Nets signing Kyrie Irving. His contract expires this year. He has the player's option to exercise. Probably if he exercises the player's option, the Brooklyn Nets won't have any option than to accept that. But if he's not exercising it, if the COVID-19 restriction rule in New York is not changing anytime soon, it doesn't make any meaningful sense. But we've seen the experiment this year. It doesn't look like it works. You play home, you play on the road. You can't play at home. They couldn't muster.
There'll be a disruption of flow.
So,
of course.
Yeah. So now they've lost like eight games in a row. At seven games in a row, I'm sure the Denver Nuggets is going to make it nine. Make it eight this night. So it's not really looking good. The way they are now, they might even drop out of the top six if Toronto continue their good form. I think if KD comes back, things might really change. But I think as at this moment, we can't consider the Brooklyn Nets as a serious title contender.
Serious, I'm going to die again. All right, perfect.
Anything that happens from there is probably just a surprise.
All right, perfect. Actually, do you agree with Olaole 100% about this one?
I agree, and Olaole just reinforces the fact that I'm Poroku Kachi. Because if you remember a few weeks ago in our social media group, I was telling you that the big three projects in Brooklyn is ending this year. And you said, oh no. I think it was you and I, we were trading banter on Instagram.
Uh-huh.
And when you see especially when you look at the losses they've suffered and how James Harden has played, James looks like mentally, he has already checked out of Brooklyn. Not just played. The same attitude he had towards the latter part of his time in Houston is what he's exhibiting right now. I think he's seen the futility of the project. The only thing that is not making this such a big story right now is primarily just because the Lakers, are struggling. And King James is bigger news.
Oh, okay.
I think from every indication, the support cast, they put all their chips on the big three, which on a very good day, like Olaole said, if they were all playing together healthy, is enough to have really elite big three and role players and compete. But right now, the big three can't stay healthy. The role players are what they are. They are role players past their prime. Blake Griffin is doing what he can, but I mean, it's a bit of a wash. I saw their game, the game they played, I think it was against the Jazz, and you couldn't even see the big boys. Kyrie couldn't come to the party until the fourth quarter. He tells me he can't do it by himself, similar to what happened in the Cavs before LeBron James came back for the second time in Cleveland. I expect that Kyrie will not pick up his player option, primarily because he needs to play. He may tell you that, yes, the money does not matter, and maybe it doesn't matter, but he would rather go to a place where he can play, and he knows that he's only missing maybe two games that will take place in New York all season long. James on his own will go. The only person I think may be stuck there for another season will be KD. And that spells doom. The only thing that would work is if, and Olawale alluded to it, if there can be a quick swap of James Harden for Ben Simmons. And you can argue that swap arguably makes both teams immediately stronger, because Ben Simmons will be surrounded by elite shooters in Kyrie and KD, and James Harden will go to a place where he can facilitate. If not being the number one, he can be the number two, because I think Joel Embiid really should not be the number one player in this team. He should be a very strong number two. So if a James Harden can go there, that trade will make both of them stronger. But yes, I agree with Olawale, and call me Oracle Kachi times two from next week, please.
All right, perfect. Thank you very much for that. Of course, in the NBA, the NBA has unveiled Kobe Bryant's trophy for the All-Star Games. A good one to honor the legend. And Kawhi Leonard is not going to be playing again this season. That's no news anyway. So I'd rather move on from that. And to the NHL, Maple Leafs defenseman Jake Muzzin has returned to practice. Don't forget, he has not played since January 15th due to a concussion that he suffered in their game on January 15th. But now he's back into training. Give him another 1 or 2 weeks to help and see what he could muster for the Maple Leafs. And of course, the U of R are teaming up with the NFL on concussion and pain management. So basically, the NFL understands the issue of head injury to players during and after their playing career. And of course, they're trying to see ways of managing the pains that this player goes through. And of course, one of the ways that they've said could be potentially one of the that could potentially be one of the ways to help with the pain management is through marijuana. So in the nearest future, you might see players being legally allowed to have marijuana in their body. Sheyi, I don't know if you're available for me, but I want to start with you on this one. How nice will it be for the players to be able to smoke marijuana while going into the pitch?
That's quite funny anyway. But I hopefully there's a different way they can handle this, because we know that such things are actually medicinal, but you know, when it comes to abuse of these substances, that is where the issue is. And I can assure you, these players have the tendency to abuse these things.
Of course.
So I'll be on the side of them finding an alternative. A better solution to that. I will not agree to that at all.
All right, perfect. Thank you very much. Kachi, what do you think? Marijuana smoking by the NFL players as a mechanism to cope against pain management?
I have nothing against it because this is currently being done in the NBA. But of course, it's only players whose doctors have prescribed it. A very famous person in the NBA who currently uses marijuana for pain management is the Golden State Warriors coach, Steve Kerr. I know that other players, because it looks like the NBA has embraced the diversity and the fact that 75% of their best players are Blacks, and they tend to dabble into these things. I think it will, if it can be on a controlled basis, and when I say controlled, I mean that players have medical prescription and that they are still tested not to use it It pretty much shouldn't be in their system on game days.
Game days.
You know, like, I don't know how possible that is. I'm not a doctor. But if it can be used in a controlled environment, like Sheyi alluded to, there are medical benefits associated with it. The fear is the risk of abuse. But I don't have any problem with the NFL introducing that. They've deprived themselves of careers of really good players simply because of marijuana. A very recent case in point would be the guy they call Josh Gordon, who moved from the Cleveland Browns to the Seattle Seahawks, from Seahawks to the Patriots, Patriots to the Kansas City Chiefs, and all this because he failed drug test. If it can, because I don't see it as performance enhancing. I don't think having marijuana makes you faster. Instead, it dulls your ability.
It depends on the body. For some people, it's an enhancer.
Well, I guess.
Come on, Olale, marijuana is legal in Canada, so.
So if it can be used in a controlled environment and not in the bodies of these guys on game days, then I have no problem with this. I have no problem with that.
All right, Olale, do you have a dissenting view to what Kachi said?
Well, I don't think it's a bit allowing it. I'm not sure how it's going to work. To say it's not, what do you call it, an announcer, I won't probably agree. Ordinarily, there are some people that outside the main event, they could perform very well. But getting the main event, probably due to fear, due to their personality issue, they tend to shrink.
Mm.
But marijuana might probably take away
that fear, that jitters.
That exactly, which is an undue advantage. Because you shrinking on a big occasion is probably what makes you less of a player to another.
So Olari, I want to ask you a question. Are you saying if they've allowed Thierry Henry to smoke during the finals, you would have bought you like three or four finals for us?
But if you actually look at the Americans, if not for the fact that they've been competing with the rest of the world, left for them, I don't think any drugs will even be called performance enhancing. If that's just me.
All right. Thank you very much for that, Olale. Kachi, I'm going to stroll back to you. And the Rooney Rule, which I think is going to be an equality and justice in the league. How high of hope should we feel about this particular rule, especially due to ensuring that more Blacks, and I could relate that to the Premier League, where we don't even have Black coaches, and what we do, they get sacked pretty fast compared to their male counterparts. And of course, in the four divisions, and these are things that people like Sokambe have come out to say, that why don't we get these jobs? Is it because of our skin color? Is it because mm-hmm. we're not just good enough, you know? Question marks over that, finger crossed. But with this, things will change. So how excited should we be about this Rooney Rule in the NFL?
Based on what has been happening, not excited. For those who don't know, the Rooney Rule was introduced in the NFL, mandating franchises to interview at least one coach of minority descent, Black, Asian, Hispanic, it doesn't matter, for every head coaching job. But what we have seen, primarily with the case of Brian Flores, the former ex-coach of the Miami Dolphins, who was sacked despite having posted back-to-back winning seasons. That means he won more games than he lost over the course of the season. And information came out, and evidences, text messages came out showing that interviews he was scheduled to attend, the people who called the interview came to the interview drunk or hungover, and text messages have gone on between arguably the greatest coach ever, Bill Belichick, to another person, Brian Dabo, who Belichick thought he was texting Dabo, not knowing that he was sending the text to Brian Flores, telling him that, oh, you are getting the job. You've already gotten the job. And Brian was like, which job? I'm just going for an interview today. You know, so telling you right now that And to put it in perspective, there are 32 franchises in the National Football League and only one Black coach. That's the Pittsburgh Steelers, Mike Tomlin. It tells me the Rooney Rule of the Rooney Rule only works in the franchise that Art Rooney, the former owner of the Pittsburgh Steelers, introduced it. That's the only place where the Rooney Rule is.
So more or less, it's a smoke screen.
It's definitely a smoke screen. And then when you look at that and compare it to what's happening in the world of football, and how many times we've said we want diversity, we want inclusion, and you see coaches, and no offense to these coaches, I'm not knocking them, but you see first time people just retiring after 1 year, coming back to coach in the Premier League, a la Frank Lampard, and then you see Black coaches who got their badges 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 years ago, struggling to even find jobs in the lower leagues. It tells me that this is just face value. It tells me there's a lot to be done, especially this month of February, that is Black History Month. It is time we bring this to the forefront. Shows such as this should also lend voices. Am I excited that things will change in the short term? No, but I'm excited that right now, more evidences are coming up. In fact, one major thing with the Brian Flores issue, who currently is suing the NFL and the Miami Dolphins, was that he alleged that the owner of Miami Dolphins offered him $100,000 for every match he purposely loses.
Wow.
The guy was like, you can't do this, because the more I lose, the more difficult it is to even hire me for my next job. Mm. Why would you want to affect the integrity of the sport? So right now, these guys really don't care about the integrity of the sport. They are more concerned about hiring who looks like them, even if that person does not have a proven record. It shows we have a long way to go.
Oh, wow. Thank you very much for that, Kachi. And what a way to dissect the said rule. I was excited about it. Now I know better. And of course, the Super Bowl is set up right now. And who is playing the Super Bowl, Kachi? And who are we expecting to win? Who are we expecting to win? What do you think is going to win? Olawale Adoniran.
Let me just chip in. This is the second time. It has never happened until last year where the stadium hosting the Super Bowl would have its home team playing in the Super Bowl. In the 102 years now of the NFL, the first time it happened was last year. Tampa Bay played in their home stadium Super Bowl. It is happening again, second time in 2 years. The Los Angeles Rams will be playing the Cincinnati Bengals in their home stadium, SoFi Stadium, the $5.6 billion stadium.
Wow.
Very beautiful.
$5.6 billion.
Yes.
Wow.
An amazing stadium. It's something you want to go watch a particular tournament there. The stadium is currently seats 70,000, but was built in such a way that when there's a big tournament, such as the Super Bowl, they can expand seating to 100,000. It has 30,000 executive suites. It's unprecedented. Obviously, we know it's owned by the owners of Arsenal, Stan Kroenke. The betting lines are currently opened with they favor the Los Angeles Rams slightly by a field goal. I also favor the Rams, even though they beat my beloved 49ers in the conference championship. I think the Rams should win it. However, the Bengals, the young man they call Joe Cool, who defeated Patrick Mahomes in Kansas, who also should not be written off. They came down from 21-3 in the half to beat the Kansas City Chiefs in the AFC Conference Finals. Except he makes big mistakes, they will put up a big fight. But I also favor the LA Rams.
All right, perfect. Thank you very much for that. And of course, Keturam dominated Barrios, Nene killing him. I saw his face and I'm like, oh wow, what a batter. That's battery. You should be sued for battery. Why don't they sue people for battery in boxing? Based on volatility, not fit injury, right? Okay, that's good. Until they kill someone one day.
because they signed to collect money even when they get battered. So there's no way to sue them.
that was a big battery.
It was quite an interesting bout, and what a way to kickstart the boxing for the year. And also, what a fantastic return for Kate Thurman. Also, the last time he was in the ring was against the retired Manny Pacquiao in 2019 July, when he lost his WBA super middleweight belt. And since then, he has been up and down. He's been injured. Yes, came back to the ring over the weekend. Talking about Barrios also, Barrios as a younger fighter, very vibrant. He's returning also from a loss to Gervonta Davis, the Tank. When the Tank totally knocked him out, I think in the eighth round last year. So exactly, and it was actually a surprise for Thurman that has been in the ring for 3 years to be that fast, for him to be able to move. He kept on moving throughout the fight. He put up his fantastic defensive skill throughout the fight, and he was able to batter Mario Barros from the beginning to the end. No wonder the face of Barrios looked like that of Avatar on a lighter mood. But it was a very good comeback for Ketsuman. He didn't look as if he's been on the sidelines for the last three years. And what that brings to that particular division is quite great, because he just threw himself into the mix. And now we can now start talking about him taking on the likes of Terence Crawford and Errol Spence Jr. And I think that particular weight division is also going to be interesting very soon.
All right, perfect. Thank you very much for that. We'll go on a quick break right now. When we'll come back, we'll be starting with Senegal versus Egypt. We have a new champion of Africa right now. So Senegal is a new champion of Africa, the tournament of the world, best tournament in the history of African Nations Cup, you know, and of course they can win it. Osimhen is not around, just wait till we're back as Nigerians. Olale, so far so good. You know how I feel about the African Nations Cup. It's not a tournament that I really appreciate. I feel there's always one shady thing or the other. But how deserving is this Senegalese team of the tournament?
Well, looking at all the teams that participated in the tournament and looking at probably the way they play, you might probably say yes, they deserved it. It might not be outright deserved, because we don't know what could have happened if Ivory Coast have actually beaten the Egyptians in the second round. We don't know what could have happened if Nigeria didn't probably have that single bad game against Tunisia, which was at a very wrong time. And that's cup competition for you. Whatever you do, your performance in the group stage doesn't count.
Yeah.
Knockout stage. One bad result, you are out. So that's not kind of competition for you. So on the base, but looking coming to the competition, they probably among the top three to win the competition, and they probably didn't face any major team until the finals. they didn't play well in the group stage. That could be their team was a bit disrupted due to COVID-19. Then probably the pitch has not really helped matters. They started picking up gradually against Equatorial Guinea. Their class actually showed what it was on display against Burkina Faso. Despite the fact that Burkina Faso actually made a very good encounter of that match, you could still say that we're the better side. Coming to the final game today, they were actually the better side today, but for the Egyptians, their game strategy was very simple. Defend. They couldn't press up front. They were all very organized in the defense. They were trying to probably win the ball. If they can win the ball somewhere close to the middle of the half or close and let them launch a counter-attack, I think they lack the energy. They look very tired. They look very like, if you understand, generally in sub-Saharan Africa, after playing three knockout games going to 120 minutes,
against strong positions.
Yeah, as much as I feel like the Egyptian team were not that good, but you still have to give them a bit of kudos. They played Ivory Coast in the second round, Morocco in the quarterfinal, host Cameroon in the semifinal. I just feel that they didn't really have much in their tank to put forward for this match. So on the balance of whatever everything that happened in the competition, despite the fact that the standard of play is not something that you really want to look back at.
Finally, Senegal has become the champion.
Yeah,
of
they won it. Probably at least you could say among the team they competed against, they were the better side or the best among the team. But overall, in terms of the standard of play, it doesn't look good. I think CAF have to do a bit, only if they will do that, a critical look at this competition, the timing. Number one, most of the top teams have their players playing across Europe. Unlike most of the European side, that you could see three players from, you can see three or four players from each team.
From the same club.
From same club, they still have a bit of chemistry. And I think that's what gives the North Africans a bit of edge. Like this Egyptian team, they are like four or five players playing at Ali. So even though they are not the best of players, but that synergy, that chemistry. So we need to look at the most confident. And that's why I feel the summer looks a bit okay. Teams can have like 2-3 weeks to prepare going to the competition. Not all these disjointed players coming in
not gonna happen.
Another thing we have to look at, the CONCACAF Gold Cup, for how many years now is only hosted by one country, United States. Even Mexico, when it comes to facilities, I'm not sure they are that bad to probably put up two venues or three venues to host the CONCACAF Gold Cup. But the whole concept just probably agrees that United States have the whole facilities. There is no need carrying this thing up and down. I think Africa should start looking at that. One of the things that can give us a very good competition is having quality pitch, which is one of the biggest problems of this competition.
That's why we lost against Tunisia.
The pitch, if you look at the African Nations Cup, you've enjoyed the recent times. Look at where they've been hosted. Look at Tunisia 2004, Egypt 2006, South Africa 2013. Anytime it is hosted in some of these countries, you could see the quality. I think CAF need to. West African countries, if you want to host, please, you need to give us something desirable.
Yeah. I can remember the game between, I think it was Cote d'Ivoire versus, was it Mali? Or I don't know, Cote d'Ivoire versus someone. Or was it Ghana in this competition where the keeper wanted to catch the ball? And
Sierra Leone versus Ivory Coast. So,
okay.
You need to do something about the quality of pitch. Most of those pitch could not sustain after one or two matches on them. After like two matches, they turn
even
back.
After the first match, the just first match, the field was, it looks like a football pitch. Is it safe to say that Mane is the best player of this tournament after all they won? And Aliou says the best coach for this tournament.
Of course, on the basis of the tournament, it's fair to argue that. But I think the tournament itself, while I may not remember their names, gave us really good idea of where African football is progressing and how this home, especially indigenous coaches are faring. Sierra Leone, the Burkinabes came in with a home-based a local coach, and I think they gave a very good account of themselves. You could say the same thing for Gambia, even though they did not come with a local coach, but they had a coach or a set of players who really listened, and you could see the way they wanted to play. And you see, say, prompts them because he has played at the highest level, going to the as far as playing in the World Cup. I'm not saying the Egyptians don't have that experience as well, but he made that claim before the tournament started that he definitely wanted to win this tournament. He played to the strength of the, of his team, even though they were decimated by COVID at the earlier stage. I felt like both Egypt and Senegal, they gave me Italy's it's called Italy's USA 94 vibes, where they barely made it out of the group stage, but then picked up steam as the tournament gradually progressed. They may not have played so well, but they were never outplayed in any of the games. I'm talking of Senegal. They may not have played so well in the tournament, but they were never outplayed in any of the matches they played. Their best game, I thought, was in the semifinals against Burkina Faso. But same way you will argue that Rafael Nadal is the best. Same way you can argue that Rafa Nadal was the best simply because he has more Grand Slams than the others. You can also argue that Aliou Cissé is the best coach simply because they won it. And Sadio Mane, who the tournament organizers also gave the best player of the tournament award to, is the best. Mesmerizing plays. It's definitely obvious that he's a world-class player who was only impeded by the pitch and also the quality of opposition.
We can argue that, but is a dirty world class player.
No. You are just an Arsenal fan in pain because of what he has done to you. Sadio Mane is a world class player.
Of course, I did not remove the world class. He's a dirty world class player.
But I need to give kudos to all the coaches that came. Augustine Guavon did not do himself any harm because we could clearly see how we wanted to play. Yes, the Eagles had a bad an off day against.
We did not have a striker. That's the problem. We don't have a striker. If we have Paul Onatru, and Victor Osimhen, forget it. We'll be at least in the semifinals of this tournament. Even if we have the one-legged Odion Gallo, we'll be in the semifinal at the very least. Sheyi, I'm going to come to you now. Middlesbrough versus Manchester United is a game that we expected that United should win, and the way the game was played, United should have won. Ronaldo losing penalty, almost everybody in the team losing chances, clear cut chances. They did not do themselves a word of favor. Now, we have a new coach. We can't keep to saying the problem is coaches, it's the coach again, because nothing is changing. I don't think the coaches have the same philosophy. But I want to ask you a question, which is imperative. I know I've obviously been biased all season not to have asked this question. And this question coming around, is Ronaldo actually disrupting the balance of the team? Because as it were, I don't know. I feel maybe if Ronaldo was not there and they just see themselves as average players and the rest, probably things could get better for them. Shay?
Debo, is that to say? Why is that? I think without Ronaldo in this particular team, you could only wonder what's going to be the position they would have found themselves this season. Talking about Champions League, it basically took Manchester United into the second round of the Champions League. So far, he has been the highest goal scorer in the league, which we've also said Bruno Fernandes has failed to really turn up this season. I strongly think it's not about Ronaldo. I think it's about the team generally. At the moment, United doesn't have a out and out striker. So if you really part Edison Cavani, but you can still argue that you can't really rely on Cavani for a full season. Why? Uh-huh. Because of his age, because of
injuries,
possibility of injuries, and this is a player they also need to manage. You understand that? Mm-hmm. So you cannot really rely on Edison Cavani for a whole full season. So I really think it's just about the whole setup in general. And we criticized Solskjaer over the last two or three seasons thereabouts, playing Fred and McTominay. What I've seen in the new coach is he's still kind of struggling to get his best team. He was able to field Paul Pogba in this last game, talking mm-hmm. about the Borough match, and yeah. we could see the difference in the midfield. He used only McTominay as the pivot to the midfield, mm-hmm. and you can definitely see the difference between the flow of passes, the way they held the ball, the way they decided to play that particular day, which you can say that is what Ralph Rangnick possibly wants. Yes, would like to do. But the question is, they were playing against a championship team. So you cannot really use that to really test that team, as far as I'm concerned. So, but if you get on the pitch with your best team, which I think on that day, that was his best, if not the best team, that was his best midfield. And they're able to create tons of chances and your guys decide not to score, then there is something else we need to look at. It might be a one-off. It might be a one-off. But I think the way he set up the team, he has set it up to create a lot of chances. And I think that team, the way it was on that night, will probably score 3 goals against other teams. But like I said, they played against Middlesbrough. So it is still there for us to see.
It's still questionable.
In short, I think we are seeing a coach that is still trying to find his best team, his best players to put in a particular sport that he wants to play.
All right, perfect. Thank you very much. Lale, you have something to say to that?
I just want to stick to your question about whether Ronaldo is holding the team back. In as much as I don't want to react just based on a single game. If you look at, if you look at Ronaldo's game throughout the season since he joined United, especially when you have somebody playing as a center forward, one thing you probably have to take note most, you have to take note of his movements around the ball, especially when the team is attacking, how he moves into space. Moving into space means how you create space for another person, all those kind of things. And if you watch something about Cavani last season, it makes anytime Cavani starts a game, it makes United better because of his movement. His movement creates spaces for others. It creates chances for himself. As long as Ronaldo is a goal machine that we know him for, Ronaldo's goals are probably his best has always been playing from the left side.
Of course, 100%.
He's not a natural. He could probably drift into position, moving in, scoring goals, scoring with his head or so. But for him to naturally start as a center forward, I think he's struggling with his movement. And for what Shehi said about his goals, and this, something about football is very funny. This is the same team that played last season, which I think they still have the limitations from last season there. But there was much more fluidity in the way they play in attack compared to this season. This season, everything wants to go to Ronaldo, and Ronaldo's everything looks very static, predictable. And if you go back to check the Portuguese team that played at the Euros, they have the same problem.
Same problem, exactly.
They have the same Ronaldo problem. We can't just ignore it. It's a legend. Nobody's disputing that. But United team actually has a lot of problems that is not Ronaldo. But in terms of the way he plays, I think there is a way he's played. Look at Bruno Fernandes. It's not a coincidence that
Bruno dropped form drastically.
The moment Ronaldo took the center stage, it's not a coincidence. We can't just ignore that. And you could see the coach, after what happened in the Brentford game, a lot of people believed he should have removed Ronaldo against Middlesbrough. But probably he would dare not do that probably in the foreseeable future. So you might look at Van Nistelrooy in his last season at United. He was the highest goal scorer, but they had to sell him and find another way of playing, which probably suits the other players. So I think from your question, mm-hmm. I would just have to say, yes, the way Ronaldo has a way of his play, the way he plays presently, is affecting the team. But that is just one part of the whole United problem, which is a bit bigger than that.
I think today's episode 71 or episode 72, if I'm not mistaken. And I think for the fourth time, I'm agreeing with Alali 100% about this one. 100% about this one. I agree with you 100%. Nothing else to be added to what you said. I don't know if Kachi wants to say something.
I would leave the paying fans of Man United to give me the proper analysis. I have nothing to add to that.
All right, perfect. Thank you very much. And of course, Nottingham Forest having killed Arsenal in the last round, down Leicester City as well. Now that they look like the team to beat. Looks like the
yeah, the Cinderella of this season.
Exactly. Like the spirit of Brian Clough is coming back to help them and help them have a good run in the FA Cup. And we know the FA Cup is always one exciting tournament where you see all City in the final, Aston Villa and the rest. Wigan in the final of the FA Cup. We see that usually. I don't know how it happens, but FA Cup just have a
Cardiff City.
And of course, you can't blame the best coach in the history of the FA Cup is a particular coach from North London, red part of North London, that his name is similar to the name of the club that he coached, and his name is Arsene Wenger. And of course, Chelsea is going to be playing against Al Hilal in the World Club Championship. Chelsea getting off to do England proud. And I'm not sure they've ever won this tournament, so probably this will be a time to give a good account of themselves. And of course, Manuel Neuer is going to be ruled out for at least the next 2 weeks due to a knee injury. Now, Kachi, I'm going to come to you. The triage, the banter of words between Simone and Xavi. Simone came out to say Xavi does cease football just one way because he has not played elsewhere. So he sees football one way. And I'm wondering, how does Diego Simeone cease football? If Xavi sees football one way, that means Diego Simeone does not even see football at all. But I want you to chip in your thoughts on this matter.
It's been so obvious that Diego Simeone is anti-football. And I don't mean that in a bad way. When I say anti-football, he's anti-establishment. He's always been a sort of a rebel. When he was marshalling the midfield for Argentina, he was not conventional. Even when he went to play in Italy for Inter Milan, he was not a conventional DM. You know, you couldn't see him for any pretty thing he did. What he knew how to do was disrupt flows. Diego Simeone jabbed Xavi by calling Xavi. It was a nice way to say Xavi was a system footballer and would not have thrived in any other, in a different environment. Similar to what we are seeing Lionel Messi. It's taking Lionel Messi the better part of a full season to gel.
So Lionel Messi has one goal in the pharmacy. Just one goal.
No, it's called over the weekend.
Oh, wow. So he has two now. Nice. Let's clap for Messi.
But I think Xavi ended up having the last laugh, especially, I'm not sure if we're segueing to the La Liga now, but Xavi had the last laugh simply because Xavi may have played one style, but his manner of coaching showed me that he can adapt to different styles. They stopped playing tiki-taka. The game against Atletico Madrid, there was no tiki-taka there. It was pragmatic. It was direct. He played Diego Simeone the way Diego Simeone knows how to play football. by out-muscling his key players. There was no flair in the way they scored. Yes, there was nostalgia with Dani Alves scoring a goal, providing an assist, but it was much more direct with Adama Traore coming in and using his
muscle.
Lean muscle to run right.
And suddenly, Kachi, sorry to disrupt you. And suddenly, Adama Traore looks like he's more sensible. Is the Baka jersey changes? He's thinking of what?
No. So see, the thing is this: when you have people that can make your mistakes look like skills, it makes you look so good. In Wolves, more often than not, those crosses coming from the end were not met with quality finishing, you know, and then you go, Adama Traore is a waste. However, because of how the Barcelona, don't forget that pitch is so big, if you overplay your cross, chances are it's still falling inside the pitch and not going out. Mm-hmm. And the Barcelona players always, Jordi Alba, holds the wings, everybody, they maximize the entire length of the pitch. So they made his mistakes and his wayward crosses look like something that was planned. And that for me, I think is the difference. And also, he has even reduced, he's played only two games, but I think he has a grand total of 6 crosses in two games. Telling you that he's listening to Xavi and adapting very well.
One last question before you go. Does he still use like 15 liters of oil?
For the two games, no, he was not shining. He was not shining on those days. But simply because he's not the biggest name. You could argue, yes, with the Yao Felix or whoever was playing in Wolves, Adama Traore was the biggest draw. So right now, it's just he's back to the system where the logo is more than a club. So you have to do anything to adapt to that logo.
That's nice. I don't forget Adama Traore. Like, actually,
maybe there's even scarcity of granite oil.
Adama Traore took a weight cut to join Barcelona, which is a good one. And we, of course, I wish Xavi best of luck. Olale, I know we did not talk about this one. And that's the fact, the horrid way that Arsenal sent off Aubameyang or disgraced Aubameyang as of Arsenal. And just to give my own thought about it, before I hear your thoughts and share his thoughts, this has arguably been the best striker Arsenal have had since Thierry Henry. I stand to be corrected.
Yeah.
Since Thierry Henry, this has been Arsenal's best striker.
Yeah.
What happened to Robbie Van Persie?
Robbie Van Persie is always injured. This guy has been consistent. God. He has been consistent. And of course, Robbie Van Persie managed to win grand total of 0 trophy for Arsenal on his own. You know, so, and he went to Manchester United. So I don't even count
Van Persie as... Where you won a league title.
Exactly. I don't even count Van Persie as an Arsenal. It was just a pass by, you know. But for me, no, it's just a pass by, honestly. For me, Aubameyang is the best striker we've had since Thierry Henry. Coach me, I start to be corrected and Kachi corrected me because he has a different view. But the way he was disgraced out of Arsenal, this is a guy that checked his mother. We need to be humane. We have to be logical. We have to be, you know, we have to be, I don't know, if we don't have these kinds of feelings in us, then we are not human beings, we are animals. I think that's what separates us from animals. And the way Aubameyang was treated, and I don't understand it. Once a player earns $350,000 pounds in a week or above $200,000, it becomes a problem for Arsenal. And they will look for any way to offer that person, whether by fire, by force, by anything, ever since Arsene Wenger left. This same thing happened with Ramsey. They agreed with Ramsey to renew his contract. And after a while, they withdrew that offer after a while. Same thing with Ozil. And this man was ushered like a thief out of Arsenal. Someone that has been carrying this team single-handedly for 3 or 4 years. Lacazette, who happens to be the top striker for Arsenal, he has scored a grand total number of 3 goals this season. just three goals with so many, I don't even know.
But I benefited from all of the goals.
but of course, it's a good one for Barcelona. No doubt about it. Aubameyang, he might have a dip in form, but he's still a world-class striker. I would argue that any day, anytime. But my question is it right for Arsenal to keep ushering people out from the through the back door because they hate so much? And is it about time that that institution as a whole is questioned? That's my question to Yola Ali.
Now, I think it's a bit difficult because it is not something, if you look at what you call the genesis of how these players left Arsenal, I don't think the three issues, probably outside the Ramsey case, the other two didn't probably, I think the story wasn't really about how much they are earning. Aubameyang case was more of indiscipline,
because he went disciplinary
issues.
Because he checked his money.
No. I'm just saying, at least from what we are aware of, from Ozil, even though it was not well pronounced, I think it's more political. It's more of about what the China.
Happened in China.
Yeah, more than any other thing. I think it was just they just had to deal with it on that ground because I'm sure they were afraid of the backlash if the fans were to be aware that Ozil was being treated because he said something like this against China. I think that was why that one was a bit treated on the IG. For me, looking at this Aubameyang's case, in as much as I don't want to probably put it alone or I don't want to go into that your conspiracy theory of the how much is any, I tried to look back at Alex Ferguson's reign at Man United. I think something came to my mind. If Alex Ferguson probably had issues with a lot of players, but he has a very, very smart way of handling it. And have a way of selling you at the right time, most especially off season. The only two players I think that left horribly unexpected, I think Yap Stam.
That was even in summer.
I know it was in the summer, but it was summer. Yap Stam was part of the plan of that season until that book came out where
the autobiography came out.
The autobiography that Alex Ferguson had a discussion with him, tapping, which. Even with that, United still got something reasonable from Lazio.
18 million pounds.
Even though it took Lazio some couple of years before they paid, United got something from Lazio. The other one is Roy Keane, which I think Ferguson had to do in the interest of the small boys when Roy Keane went on a rant on every United player, including Rio Ferdinand, that he doesn't believe that guy earns 100,000 pounds a week. So outside those two cases, there are plenty of players that Ferguson had issues with, but he still had the right time. He had losing very well. He had issues with Rooney when Rooney didn't want to sign. I wanted to go to City, but he waited for the right time to deal with Rooney. I think what made this case worse was the way Arsenal. From the information we have, Arsenal will still be paying his part of the salary. Is it part or they will be paying his salary at the end of the season?
They will be paying part of the salary at the end of the season. Bigger part of the season.
They are not collecting any transfer.
50 kobo on 50.
And he has how many years left on his contract?
I think he has he should have like 2 years left now.
The whole issue looks very, very personal. That's where I have to believe Aubameyang's side of the story. That I don't have any problem with any other person in Arsenal except Arteta.
I'm reserving that question for Shay.
Which makes the whole thing look very, very bad. There, in this current transfer market, there is no way, if Arsenal has handled that case smartly, there is no way you shouldn't get at least 30 million. At least, I'm just being conservative from Aubameyang, if that issue were handled maturely. But I think the Arsenal people, they're not trying to change the narrative that they're going to save so amount of money from his salary. It's all, from the business point of view, it doesn't make sense.
From the sporting point of view,
they've allowed emotions of their coach to get to them, and they did a very stupid business handling over a very good striker to Barcelona on the platter of gold.
On the platter of gold, exactly. Shei, I want to come to you. This dictator in human skin, Sonia Abacha of Emirates, William Saliba Arsenal bought him for 30 million. It's not good enough. But this same man bought Pablo Mari that cannot use his head and kept using him. This same guy, Guendouzi, abused someone. And because he was fighting for the Arsenal jersey, Mateo was fighting for Arsenal jersey. Because they were mocking Arsenal. Mateo was fighting the Brighton and Hove players because of Arsenal. He sent him away. Same thing with Lucas Torreira. Same thing with Aubameyang. Same thing with Mesut Ozil. And amongst others that we don't, I can't even tell you off the top of my head. How long is Arsenal supposed to keep up with this kind of player, this kind of coach? Because he played under Wenger, played under David Moyes, studied under Pep Guardiola, probably under Van Gaal. These coaches, as crazy as some of them are, they don't even behave this way. So I'm wondering, is he just a pure sadist, or he has footballing reasons for these decisions? Because I don't understand. If you ask me, I don't understand how any normal human being would take these kind of decisions.
Yeah, Debo, I think basically there are footballing reasons. Of course, apart from the Ozil issue, about the China, the statement he made and all that, which basically it was a commercial issue, and that is an issue that is actually had to be dealt with by the board, not even by the coach. Once they tell you a particular player is not available to you to use, then you had better go back to the drawing board and make do with what you have. Talking about the other players, I think apart from Aubameyang, that he has come out to mention that the only issue he has is with the coach, not with Arsenal generally. I think the others are footballing reasons. Now look at the two players we are talking about that are different reasons apart from footballing reasons. They are very good players. They are the big boys of the team. One thing you need to understand is Sir Alex Ferguson, I think Olawale just did a fantastic justice on how Alex Ferguson handled the dressing room. There is only one boss. There can be only one boss. As much as Alex Ferguson needed someone on the pitch to be like him, which they had in Roy Keane, he had to let go of him. And that was really painful. He had meetings, even with the assistant coaches, before he agreed to let Roy Keane go. So that was, something that was that painful. But for that kind of his own decision, there can be only one boss. He had to let the likes of Roy Keane go. So coming back to Mikel Arteta, I think he's trying to also take a hold on that particular dressing room.
With two consecutive positions. Okay, continue.
The thing is, if you look at Arteta is a young coach. Yes, he was assistant to Pep Guardiola, fantastic. Pep Guardiola will come out and tell us he knows everything about football, blah, 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 blah. He's his good friend. But I've seen a coach that young win at least one trophy for Arsenal. And also, this season, they started woefully, and we can see where they are at the moment. What I'm trying to say in short is, for footballing reasons, if you make decisions as a coach and we can see the progress in your team, I see no reason why any fan, any board will stand against you and tell you why you're making these decisions, because you have result to show for it. So I don't think this is the right time to come out and criticize Arteta. As far as I'm concerned, I still remember the beginning of this season. I mentioned that Arsenal is going to get better, and I've seen that over the course of this season. Not that they are fantastic, but they've been better. And if you also look at the type of players they have, you can't compare to the rest of the top six. So I still think he's doing a fantastic job. I stand by whatever he's doing at the moment.
Wow.
like I said, results is the only thing a coach can show. Can show you to tell you that he has made the right decision.
Wow. Kachi, she is truly the Trojan horse for us now. Kachi, do you agree with Sheyi on this one?
No, but I've always said it before that I think Aubameyang has disciplinary issues. We just don't know. There are several things that, yes, you want to argue the business side, but in Saint-Étienne, in Arsenal, in AC Milan, he had been sowing these seeds.
He does not have any problem in AC Milan and Saint-Étienne.
The only place
he had problem was Dortmund.
He did not want that man to sell
Ousmane Dembele.
Absolutely not. Okay. Aubameyang was called an enfant terrible. In French, it's like terrible child when he was in AC Milan because he felt he was already at the level to play with the likes of the Kakas of this world, but he wasn't being played. And he forced his way out of AC Milan. So I think that money got to him. The fact that he felt he could hold Arsenal to ransom, and let's not forget that Arteta is very hot-headed. That was why he could thrive in Everton in the first place, because that team that he was captain of in Everton was a team of untalented or semi-talented but hot-headed boys. And two masters cannot run the ship. It was a case of I either divide my team by causing division or I let go of this issue. And if it meant paying half of his money to be let go, I usually want teams to have the personality of their coaches. Aubameyang was not exhibiting the personality of Arteta. He was butting head with him. It wasn't as silent as Ozil. Ozil's head butting was done under the radar. So it was so obvious that yes, the club was using the media and all its resources to fight Ozil. Aubameyang's own was too obvious that it was him. Forget the baby face smile you were showing. I have always believed that Aubameyang was the main reason.
Abba did not even do anything.
This is my own point. I'm not probably disputing the fact that Aubameyang is either a troublemaker or what do you call it, or whether he has disciplinary issues. Of course, I understand that. But if among the so-called top six today, one of the most challenging teams when it comes to finance, as in Arsenal. A challenging time of how much to dispense, Arsenal and United Arsenal. In terms of where they value.
Who to pay?
They don't value money in the footballing sense. They look at football money like JP Morgan. That's where they do time value of money like.
Yes, it's bankrupt.
Buying this player today. We can invest it in one stock that will generate so.
Yes.
That's where those guys look at money.
Yes.
And it's for them, I can tell you that at the back of their mind now, that is like they will have done their mathematics. They will have looked at, the future earnings of that Aubameyang so, and come to the conclusion that they've lost like £40 million, which
Them
Arteta will still suffer for. That is my own this thing. They could have at least gotten something out of
it. I agree. But there was no way. How do you extend the contract? The all loves were lost, right?
Wow. I remember after the FA Cup. Believe in me, my friend. I told you, my friend. And that guy signed 3-year contract. That guy could have done an Alexis Sanchez for Arsenal. We're talking about Van Persie. I told him he's just a passerby in Arsenal.
That contract was purely emotional because Arsenal had not won for a long time.
He could have done so many things.
It was an emotional contract.
This guy chose to stay with Arsenal. A useless worker for that matter. He chose to stay with Arsenal. And this is the best way Arsenal can repay him. By throwing him...
Let's not forget that Olawale has explained it to you. Arsenal is losing tons of money by letting this guy go for free. They're losing tons of money, but they still need to keep that dressing room. There has to be one voice.
They've spoken about Ferguson. I'm pretty sure Ferguson did not do this in 1989, 1990.
Remember, Alex Ferguson. Ferguson told Beckham to cut his hair.
Forget about that. Ferguson was already a big boy. I'm pretty sure Ferguson did not get to Manchester United to say, "Oh, Steve Bruce, I don't want you this team again. Go away, Ballista. Yeah, I don't want you. Go away." He did not do that at the start of. He did not do it.
No.
Let me tell you something. I'm sorry, I'm being emotional about it.
There are two players that Ferguson indulged.
He indulged them. One is Eric Cantona.
Roy Keane and Paul.
Which Roy Keane?
Cantona.
Eric Cantona and Ronaldo. After Cantona said he was not playing for United again, Ferguson was always at the driveway at Carlton, waiting for Cantona to come back for more than 4 months before he gave up that this guy is not coming back again. He indulged Ronaldo.
Are you saying Aubameyang should have been indulged? Is that what you're saying now? With the social media, it can be managed better.
Kachi, the only thing that we know, and until we have a fact otherwise to the contrary, is the fact that Aubameyang went to France to check on his mother. That's the only fact that we have.
It could have been managed better, I agree. But that does not absorb Aubameyang of fault.
I'm not absorbing.
So let's agree to disagree.
Yes.
It could have been managed, but I agree. Exactly. Arsenal lost money by doing that thing for free. However, until we have the full story, which may come out if it's Nigerian politician that released book 35 years after the incident and it doesn't make any references anymore or relevance, we may get to know the full story.
Actually, later. I'm always, you know, I know. Olale fought for me, he disagreed with me a couple of weeks ago about this thing. Like, I always say, where's the loyalty? We were talking about Benitez a couple of weeks back and the way he should be loyal to Liverpool.
Guys,
and no.
There is nothing like
And wait, Olale. And I was so vehemently against Benitez for what he did. But where's the loyalty from Arsenal towards a player that signed a 3-year extension with a dying club? That everybody, even we, the fans of Arsenal, we know this is a dying club. It's a dead club, not just buried yet. We know it. And this is the best way to repay that player because of £350,000. Yet, Stan Kroenke can build $5.6 billion stadium in America.
Debo, you know what he's doing?
I don't think Aubameyang has also been in the best of form this season.
It's fine. It's okay. There was a time Henry had it.
I think it's more just
there was a
good,
time that Ryan Giggs had
it.
They wanted to send Ryan Giggs to Inter Milan. It happens. You have to look at the antecedent.
Let me cut you short. I heard Zakari has called on his debut for
Juventus. His debut for Juventus.
The man, they offered United at €5 million. But United said they are not sure whether the future coach. We want such a player.
But they
already are planning for other signings for the future coach.
But the future coach, we want Fred, like Manchester United.
So they can't gamble just £4 million, even if the coach doesn't want the guy.
But they
can sell later.
But they will give Pogba £500,000 every week.
Yeah, exactly, because it's on TikTok and
every week. So that means Pogba's four months wage would buy that guy conveniently.
You understand?
Like Manchester United. Anyways, exactly. As a matter of fact, I think this is the best show I've ever done in my life, and this is the best show that I've done on. Even if I don't do another one again, if this is the AWS Sata, I love it and I enjoy it. 100%. That's the wrap, guys. That's the show. Thank you very much for staying with us. And of course, to you, Mr. Ateta, Sonia Abacha Ateta, continue with your tutorial value.
News flash, everyone. Brooklyn Nets lost their 8th straight. They are now in the play-ins position.
Oh, wow. You just have to do
Toronto
that.
Toronto is ahead of them now.
Toronto above them right now.